This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Water levels on the Mississippi River have been high since the beginning of spring, thanks to a significant snowpack this winter and frequent rains. The prolonged flooding has had an impact not only on communities along the river, but on the organizations and businesses that manage and use the waterway. Today we're talking about the significance of this year's spring flooding and how it's impacting the shipping industry on the Mississippi River. We're here with Todd Shea, Warning Coordination Meteorologist with the National Weather Service in La Crosse. George Stringham, spokesman for the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And Molly Isnardi, Vice President of the Upper River Services in St. Paul. So Todd, it's not unusual for us to have spring flooding on the Mississippi River, but I wonder if you can talk about how this spring has been different.
I think the difference going into this spring was we were so wet last fall. We had a big winter with snowfall. We knew that there was going to be a lot of high water problems. And then as the spring snowmelt occurred, which actually was pretty ideal for most of the upper Midwest, it could have been a lot worse, I think. The thing that is kind of summarized this year's high water flow is the length of it. It wasn't so much that the crest levels set records or anything like that, but it's the fact that it's been so high so long, and it's setting records for, you know, how high it is above the no wake zone and how high it's been above the flood stage in a lot of the communities. And so that's kind of what just the volume of water that has flown through the area and the fact that it's not falling very fast has probably been the big picture, at least from our aspect.
Yeah, can you give some context of, you know, kind of records-wise where this year stands?
Well, like I said, it's broke records as far as April average flows, and I'm mainly talking about the La Crosse area, realizing that it runs up north and south of there, but and also in the month of May setting high flow records. And then, you start looking at the number of days, both total and even some consecutive records of being above, at La Crosse, for example, 12 feet is flood stage, and how high it's even been up into the moderate levels in a lot of these communities and stuff. For example, at La Crosse, we're still above the no wake zone reading of 10 feet, and we're going on 88 days now. So since early to mid-March, everything has been in flood stage or higher, and it's just finally now, here we are, early to mid-June, it's finally starting to drop down. So the record is the number of days is what's setting the records.
Yeah, and you mentioned that this problem can really be traced back to last fall. And George, I know that some of the issues that the Corps is dealing with as far as sediment can also be traced back to last fall. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how those factors have played into sediment this year.
Yeah, sure. Like Todd was saying, I had a wet fall, wet winter, and all that sort of set the stage as far as sediment's concerned, because it basically loaded up a lot of the tributaries with sediment, so that once the river started flowing in the spring and all that sediment just came out into the channel of the Mississippi River. And while it has been high, and Todd referenced that we've had a slow fall, and that actually helps us when it comes to dredging, because if you have a quick fall in the river, all the sediment drops out immediately right wherever it is. So a slow fall, sort of like a slow melt, is a good situation. But right now we have a lot of places we're looking at, or we have identified with our survey boats out on the river that will need some significant dredging. Right now the high waters is helping us, because it's the few tows that are in the area are able to get through for the most part. But we have identified several places, 12 to 14 places, that we'll need to look at and address.
Yeah, I mean, at least a dozen places. How does that compare to how many places you guys typically dredge in a spring?
Normally, the first times we have to go out in the spring to dredge, spring, early summer, we normally have four, maybe five. So, we're looking at three times as many places.
Yeah, I mean, the Corps recently awarded a nearly $5 million contract, actually, with a company out of St. Paul to help with dredging operations this year. I wonder if that's typical to see those kinds of contracts.
No. We're fortunate we were able to get that contract award. So right now we have three dredges out on the river, which is which is what we normally would have. This one will allow us to get at least five out there, maybe more, hopefully. But right now we have, like I said, three. Next week, the other two, for the contract that was awarded last week, should be getting out on the river to work. So, yeah, it's not normal.
And, you know, can you go ahead and dredge these places, even though we still do see high waters right now?
Yes and no. The downside to dredging right now while the river's still up is that, one, with the river still up, you still have that sediment that's being suspended in the river itself. So that still has to end up somewhere. And number two, if we dredge an area, there's not a guarantee that that dredged channel will maintain itself and keep open in a lot of cases. So right now we're just dredging the areas that we have to in order to allow the few tows that are out there to get through. But at the same time, you know, then we've identified and prioritized all the other locations so that when the river does eventually start to fall out, we can hit those immediately.
What kind of impact will this have on the Corps' budget?
This year's budget, we had about $2 million more in this year's budget for dredging operations or channel maintenance altogether, which includes dredging. So that gives us a little more flexibility. And we also have options like for a while there, we also had a dredge that we were borrowing out of our sister district down Rock Island. They came up here to help us dredge. And so that gave us a little bit of flexibility. And they weren't needing them because they didn't have anything going on down there, but we had to send them back. So budget-wise, you know, we're good for right now. We get later in the year, we'll see.
Molly, you know, we know that the Mississippi River has seen high waters not only in our area but also to the south, closer to St. Louis, some very significant flooding down there. I wonder if you could talk about how all of this flooding has really impacted the shipping industry this year.
Yes, it has. So to speak to that, it's literally shut down the entire system. The St. Louis Harbor was actually closed. The Coast Guard came out and issued a closure, which is very unprecedented. And so that literally cuts everything in half. So the Illinois River saw some closures. The Ohio River has seen a significant amount of high water on that tributary. And we've also seen, you know, closures on the Missouri River and the Arkansas as well. So the entire Midwest region is really being affected by this. And for us, you know, we've seen some barges come into town. Typically this time of year, we see about 1,400 barges by the end of June that have made it up to St. Paul. This year we've seen about 90. And so that has, you know, that just shows you how the bottleneck on the river, we've just got hundreds of barges waiting to get through this.
Yeah, I mean, that is a very significant decline in traffic. And I just wonder, is that scary for companies like yours to see, you know, not enough work?
It is. And then the ripple effect from that is everybody that it affects, you know, because the St. Paul area, you know, for the Twin Cities, we depend 100% on getting our road salt by barge. That comes up to through barges. Also the fertilizer for the farmers, you know, it's affecting, you know, the cement deliveries. So people that are looking at construction, if they have to move it out of a barge into a truck or to rail, they could be looking at significant increases of almost 40% more. That's some of the talk that we've heard. So it's really, you know, it's not just us, it's the farmers, it's the industries, it's the, you know, the municipalities that everybody is just kind of waiting to see if once the river does open, if we're going to be able to recover from this and what the long-term effect really will be.
Are these barges that are not able to travel up the river, I mean, do we know that most of them will eventually make that journey when we do see waters fall? You know, is there likely to be a very, you know, great spike in traffic on the waterway, you know, when these locks and dams reopen?
That's what we're hoping for. It's really tough to, you know, once we kind of miss those windows of opportunity, like for the spring planting, We can't make those up, but we have heard that people are still trying to, you know, look for storage in the area for some of the fertilizers that were already loaded into barges that they've made the decision. The companies that own that those products have decided not to move it off into rail or truck. And so for every barge that comes up to the Twin Cities, that's equivalent to about 70 semi-trucks. So we're really hoping that we can keep it into the barges and still make up some of that time. We just, you know, it's a limited, as everybody knows, it's, you know, Mother Nature tells us, Mother Nature and the Corps kind of dictate how long we can go in our season because, you know, the Corps has to take care of doing maintenance on the locks and dams as well. So usually they plan those over the winter months. So, you know, we have a limited amount of time to get this to get the products moved up and get them distributed where they need to go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought this up because that was definitely something I wanted to ask about. I mean, you know, we know that the shipping season ends about the same time every year, and especially when weather dictates that. And I just wonder if that losing days is a scary prospect.
It is. But we also know that, you know, the weather is a huge part of it, as a, you know, the tariffs and some of the other things that affect some of the products that move on the river. So we're thinking Mother Nature, at least we can we can guarantee on that. The uncertainty of that, it's the other things that, you know, we're always playing this game with, you know, there are so many different factors that play into it.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We're talking about continued flooding on the Mississippi River this spring and how organizations and businesses that use the waterway are responding to the issue. We're here with Molly Isnardi from Upper River Services in St. Paul, George Stringham from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District, Todd Shea from the National Weather Service in La Crosse. Molly, I wanted to kind of follow up on your comment about other factors potentially impacting traffic. You mentioned specifically tariffs. I wonder if you could kind of expand on that issue.
Well, last year in the, you know, in the upper Midwest here, when the tariffs went into effect, we kind of likened it to someone just turning the spigot off. There were, you know, the farmers weren't going to be getting the prices that they were hoping for, and so a lot of people were holding that grain back a little bit. And so I think there was the thought that maybe this year things would have worked out and we could start seeing some of that southbound of the exports start moving. And then you had the perfect storm of now we have the high water. Even if the water, you know, drops a little bit more, we still struggle to get into some of the docks that want to do the loading. So it's just the tariffs have had a huge impact. And even now this year with the additional talks, of tariffs on Mexico, and Mexico is one of our largest importers of the corn coming from the Midwest. So it's that does have a significant impact on when the farmers are going to start moving those products.
Yeah, I mean, can you talk a little bit about how important agriculture is to the shipping industry in general in our area? You know, kind of maybe, you know, what portion of your business is really coming from the ag industry?
So for us, we're the, you know, harbor operator up here in St. Paul, and I'd have to say that it's close to 45% to 50% of what we normally see. We have seen a significant change with more northbound tonnage coming in. Different, you know, there's a lot of the fertilizer, the cement, a lot of rock comes up into our area, but we're a business that was, you know, built for exporting grain from this area down to the Gulf of Mexico.
I wonder also if there have been impacts, the high water have had impacts on infrastructure related to shipping. Not only ports, but also kind of the places that the barges kind of depend on as they're moving through the system.
Well, so for us, yeah, we have nowhere, like when the water gets so high, we have fleeting areas, and those have been underwater, and with a lot of the movement of just the drift that's come through, it's really washing out a lot of areas that haven't seen the water in a long time. So we're seeing dock walls that, you know, we're going to have a lot of inspections once we get things moving again, once we get down to normal or close to normal water levels. Just some of the dock walls that have been impacted just with the water, the constant water, as Todd and George talked about earlier, just the sustained longevity of this flood has really had an impact.
George, I wonder if you could also talk about infrastructure impacts of that sustained water for the Corps. I mean, are there potential impacts to locks and dams?
Well, sure. Right now we have several locks and dams down south that are currently closed because of high water. And one of the things we look at when we go to open them is obviously you're going to have potential for damage from trees and whatever else in the river, but also with the river being up and the currents being stronger, you also worry about scours and stuff like that, where the river's current digs out from either under the lock walls or near the dam, stuff like that. So that's something that we're always concerned about, obviously, with the river when the river comes up.
Yeah, I mean, can you explain maybe how high waters causes a lot more debris and other things to kind of end up in the river?
Yeah, well, it's first of all, we tell one of our water safety messages we tell to the recreation boaters in particular is that, hey, when the river's up, the current's stronger, it's carrying a bunch of stuff that you don't normally have out there, like trees and whatnot, and all this stuff is being washed in from tributaries, and another contributing factor to that is that with the higher flows on the smaller tributaries, they have more erosions on the bank, which allows sometimes trees to collapse into the river, and that's how they end up in the main channel of the Mississippi River.
Todd, is there any work that the National Weather Service, looks at as, is going to be looking at as we kind of look at the impacts of this sustained high water on just the nature of the river?
Well, that's a good question. I think our first step is to look back at our verification, the river forecasts that come out through our agency, and how those responded with such a wet spring. We're seeing responses on the area rivers, and the runoff is just so extreme that sometimes these models have a little tougher time working in those details. And so even now, we'd have to go through an extended dry period to get what we would consider kind of normal runoff and normal response on the area tributaries. But we're not seeing that yet. Anytime we get a little bit of rain, we see higher than normal jumps on area rivers and stuff. So I know that some of the work that's being talked about of, I don't know if it'd be called a recalibration, and you talk about, like George did, some of the rivers, you might have sediment issues that might affect the stages and the flows, things like that. A little bit goes into the United States Geological Survey and the work they do on area rivers and such, but as far as our other operations, hoping that this drier pattern we've been in a little bit sustains itself so that we can all recover a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about kind of where we're at now and what things look like into the immediate future when it comes to water levels.
Well, the good news is that we've definitely had a switch in our weather patterns. Everyone's seeing it now, but when we... we had that setup coming into the spring that was going to be that potential for flooding and high water. And then, unfortunately, we got into a pattern April into May, especially, where it was just day after day of thunderstorms in the Midwest. It reminded me a little bit of 1993, which was one of the years, especially down towards St. Louis, and because it was just round after rounds of thunderstorms. But luckily, as we got into early June here, late May, the pattern shifted a little bit to a cooler, which some people don't like, but a cooler and drier weather pattern that is allowing that crest wave along the Mississippi now, as far as I understand it, is now south of St. Louis. And so we're expecting the falls to continue here, at least in the short term. So I know in the next week or two, the higher risk of heavier rains is still situated more maybe across the southern Missouri valleys, and so maybe from the St. Louis area south. So, again, for a lot of the commerce and the tributaries and main stem coming up, at least between St. Paul and St. Louis, the outlook for continuing falling water looks pretty good.
Is there the possibility that we could see river levels rise again?
Well, yeah, it's something we're going to have to watch out if we do switch to, again, a more active weather pattern. As I alluded to before, it's the runoff is still pretty quick. And so if we were to get, you know, a couple days of 2 to 5 inch widespread rains somewhere in the region, you could see some responses back on the rivers. I don't know to the levels that we've seen only because there was so much going into this release, but again, we'd have to have quite a dry period to get us kind of out of that danger zone.
Do you think that that's likely, that we'll see that dry period? I know a lot of, a lot of farmers are looking at kind of the moisture levels of the soil. This has definitely been something that's on people's minds, and I just wonder if that's a possibility.
I suppose it is. I think in some respects the weather has a way of evening itself out, but, you know, I don't know if it's climate change or what, but we are certainly seeing more and more rainfall records being set and record levels on rivers. More of those readings have been in the more recent decades and stuff. So you just never know. You know, I'm not a big fan personally of longer range outlooks. I think staying in that week or two time frames when you have a little more tangible evidence is safer. And like I said, at least in the short term here, it looks like a little quieter.
I'm glad you brought up, the rainfall records that we've seen. I know that this, since the beginning of this year, we've been in just setting really high precipitation records, from the snow, as we talked about earlier, now to rainfall. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about those records we've seen.
Well, it depends on where you're at, but 2018 was the wettest year on record for the United States. And when we start, again, looking at these trends of trying to think of the time frames here, like 77 to 97 and then 97 to 2017 or something, you know, those 20-year blocks, especially in our part of the country here, and we're talking about western Wisconsin, Minnesota, eastern Iowa, the upper Mississippi River Valley, we've certainly seen spikes or, you know, the normal or average rainfalls in that couple decade time frame has jumped up by maybe 3 to 5 inches. And so, you know, there's definitely some kind of trend happening there. And then it seems like on top of that, we're getting hit with more and more of these excessive rain events where you're seeing 3 to 5 inches and significant flash flooding. And it just kind of has a way of compounding itself. And when you've had 3 or 4 years of that and you have a record snow winter and the pattern just doesn't let up, it's kind of pushes where we're at now, where people are seeing water they normally haven't and these record flows along the main stems.
George, I wonder if this is an issue that the Corps is paying attention to and talking about for the future.
As far as the types of storms and the frequency and stuff like that, that's not really as much in our wheelhouse. It is something that's definitely on our radar. As far as the environment is concerned and to minimize our carbon footprint, which is going a little bit outside of what the conversation is here. One of our main concerns, and this sort of falls into, Todd was talking about flash flooding, and that's a significant contributor to sediment, because that's when the velocity of the river, the waterway, the tributary is very high. You get a lot of bank erosion. Like I said before, you know, that's how the trees a lot of times get in the river, because the road out at the bank, the tree falls in the river and ends up in the Mississippi. Hopefully not on your boat. So in that respect, some of the things we look at is what can we do to, stabilize those banks in an environmentally friendly way.
And Molly, I wonder, from your perspective as well, if just these, greater trends of precipitation that we've been seeing, is that something that is being talked about in the shipping industry?
Oh, absolutely. Because it seems like, the 100-year flood that people used to look out to has been happening more and more frequently. And, we just had significant high water in 2014, and that was due to a precipitation, a lot of a lot of rain in June and July, and so we didn't see the spring flooding then, but we saw, you know, higher waters. And, you know, so as an industry, we're the question is, what can we do? And, you know, other than learning how to, you know, maybe deal with it, but it definitely makes you take a look at your planning and what you need to do to make sure that we have the resources ready so that when the river is open, we can move things very quickly. But I will say it's difficult in the sense that the greater population really isn't always aware. I think because the Corps of Engineers has, you know, done a great job building berms and keeping, you know, cities safe from the high waters that we're having, a lot of people aren't aware of everything that we're dealing with all the time.
Molly Isnardi, Vice President of Upper River Services in St. Paul, is here with us today to talk about prolonged flooding on the Mississippi River and how it's affecting industries that rely on the waterway. She's joined by George Stringham, spokesman for the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and Todd Shea, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in La Crosse. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the impacts of continued high waters on the Mississippi River. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Flooding on the Mississippi River has continued for months thanks to continued wet weather this spring. The high waters continue to impact the navigation channel and the ability of shipping and fishing industries to use the waterway. Today we're talking about the issue with Todd Shea, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in La Crosse, George Stringham, spokesman for the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and Molly Isnardi, Vice President of Upper River Services in St. Paul. Todd, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about potential long-term impacts. You know, now that we do see the water starting to recede a little bit, you know, are there potential impacts to the rest of the summer?
I think one of the things we, from a weather side of things, that we'll be watching is the amount of water in the soil right now. Potential areas where there's water collected that normally wouldn't is maybe how that adds more moisture to the atmosphere. You know, higher humidity levels and stuff. Now, that can change, though, if you have a couple weeks of warm, dry weather and some of that surface water could go away or be less of an impact. But and typically we start looking at when the crops develop and what kind of impact that has on moisture in the atmosphere, because it actually does. So I guess long-term that would be one of our concerns. And then, of course, monitoring the soil level. Or the soil moisture levels, I should say, and how that would impact runoff for future rain events.
And George, I wonder kind of what the top long-term impacts the Corps is really looking at now that we kind of are kind of moving away from this for a long high water period.
Well, obviously the big one for us for navigation is going to be doing what we can to get the channel open, keep it open. Molly was referenced 2014, and in some senses we're sort of looking at this in a similar way, in the sense that we're looking at several hot spots that need to be addressed immediately once the river starts to fall out. And in 2014, granted, we started dredging a month later because, as Molly said, it was a June rain event which led to a lot of sedimentation closing the river in July. But one of the things that happened in 2014 is that we spent all the rest of the navigation season just doing what we could to keep the channel open, and continuing on again into 2015. So that's sort of how we're sort of leaning forward in our foxhole, looking at this year's event, is that it's going to be an all summer, all navigation season effort to keep the river open to navigation, and then we'll just have to see what next fall's and next spring's weather events do to the next navigation season.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier in the program that the Corps is looking at 12 to 14 locations on the river that are needing dredging. Can you talk a little bit about, what progress you've been able to make in that direction, kind of where you're at?
Well, we've anywhere from the Port of St. Paul, just upstream of Lock and Dam 2. There's always a tough area there, and Molly knows which one I'm talking about. But we've been able to knock out probably about more than 200,000 cubic yards of material that we've been able to remove. We could potentially remove a lot more, but that also goes back to a conversation we had earlier about that if we remove the sediment now, then there's no guarantee that channel will be kept open. So, but in comparison, typically, throughout the whole navigation season, we'll remove around 1 million cubic yards of material. And this year, we're looking at probably 1.4 to 1.5 million. So we're looking at 50% more. So where we are right now is that we've cleared areas in near Alma, Wisconsin, upstream of that, and areas down in Pool 9 and Pool 10, and also in the St. Paul port area.
Is there a concern that the extra dredging that's needing to happen this year, how that will impact the sites where you store dredged material?
Most definitely, because we are limited in where we have to put the sediment. Up here, when we dredge, we take the material, mostly sand, out of the river and take it to an upland placement site, which is out of the floodplain. And that land is hard to come by. I mean, because if it's good land, it's going to be farmed. Because there's not much, up here in this part of the river, there's not all the floodplain isn't that wide. So you just go out a little bit, then you go straight up the bluff. So there's not a lot of land. So we are definitely concerned about both temporary and permanent placement sites, and it's just a juggling act, really.
I wonder if this is also going to mean, just all the things that come with having to move more material, things like, more staffing and even just more traffic on the roadways this summer.
Staffing-wise, not really, and we're not really looking at more transportation necessarily this year, but potentially in the future. That said, there are several sites where there's literally tons of sand. It's nice, clean sand that's available for anyone to use, whether you want just a truckload or several dump trucks. So there is plenty of material out there, and we'd love for everyone to take as much as they want.
Molly, I wonder if the dredging progress of the Corps is something that the shipping industry is worried about.
No, actually, well, it always is a concern for the industry as a whole, but the Corps has done a really good job of responding and making sure that the dredges are in areas that, that they're being proactive to make sure that they're in a good spot. So then when we do find areas that need to be, get that relief from the dredge, that they are able to respond. And the Corps has done a really good job to make sure that the resources are, because nothing moves fast on the river. We like to say that everything moves at the speed of walk. So when we run into a problem, making sure that everything is spread out is, a very good thing. And the Corps has been a great partner for our industry. They participate with the Coast Guard to make sure that we're all working together to make sure that we can keep these waterways open.
Yeah, and George.
Yeah, I just want to add on to that also that, it's Molly had mentioned the Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard, but it's really all three of us, the transportation industry, because they're the ones that are the navigation industry. They're the ones out there daily going through these waters, and they're the ones that a lot of times identify hot spots. We have our survey boats that go out there, and survey reaches the river, just like in the Coast Guard, when they go out and they'll do surveys to put the buoys in the right places and whatnot. But also, it's, you know, you have industry saying, hey, you want to check out this this reach here between miles 447 to 448 or whatever. So it's more than just one or two people. It's a large group.
And Molly, I wonder when the shipping industry is really expecting, how quickly you guys are expecting to kind of get back up to full speed?
Well, the latest reports that we've had, looks like the St. Louis Harbor is going to be reopening if it's not completely reopened right now. A lot of the locks that were still closed, they're thinking maybe by the 17th or 18th. But what's nice is with the barges that we're able to kind of move up earlier in the spring before we had a lot of the high water hit, that they are already posed that once the tip, we're hoping by the end of this week when some of the upper locks, like I think it was 12, some of the other ones, once they start opening, barges will start moving, and so we think that that will help some of the congestion, kind of ease it into getting back on track.
I know that an issue in previous conversations we've had about the river, that, you know, some of the locks and dams along our stretch of the Mississippi are not as updated and can't facilitate a larger barge formation, if you will. And so I wonder if that is possibly going to be a rub as these barges are looking to move as quickly as possible through these locks and dams.
Well, it definitely brings up the issue that our industry has been working with, you know, Congress and the Corps to say, you know, the lock and dam system was put in place back in the 30s and 40s, and it was expected to be around for approximately 50 years. And most of them have outlived that lifespan, and so they were not set up to move 12 barge tows. A lot of them can handle six at a time, and so the barges, the boats will have to push six barges through and then get those on one side of it, come back, and get the rest of their tow to continue through. And so this does highlight that if we were able to update some of these, the locks along the way, that would definitely help ease the congestion within, especially the upper Mississippi.
Are you, I guess, hopeful that we might see some traction on that issue in the near future?
Well, it's hard on the backs of this high water because it has been so devastating for so many people. But if you were to find the silver lining in it, I guess it would be that it has really opened up a lot of people's eyes to the significance of river shipping, and kind of shed a light on our, you know, our roadways and our railways cannot handle all of the products that we're moving. You know, they're almost to the max capacity as well. So what it's done is it's really highlighted the significance and importance. And I think a lot of people, especially out in Washington, are starting to hear that from so many different voices.
That's Molly Isnardi from Upper River Services in St. Paul. She's here with us today to talk about prolonged high waters on the Mississippi River. She's joined by George Stringham from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District and Todd Shea from the National Weather Service in La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. George, I know that the recreation industry isn't necessarily something that the Corps specializes in, but you guys do come in contact with, you know, just the public who use the riverway. And I wonder if what impacts you've seen from the high waters on, you know, public interest in using the river, and if we're, I don't know, seeing as many people out on the water.
We're not seeing, right now at least, with the river up, we're not seeing as many as we normally do. What we are seeing, though, which is kind of alarming, is that when the river's up like this, our lock and dams that are on the Mississippi are at a condition called open river, where the gates that are normally in the water are up out of the river all the way, so we can just pass as much water as possible. The alarming thing that we are seeing is more and more boaters that are boating through those areas, which is not only dangerous, but it's also illegal. That's one thing that you can, if caught, then the county sheriffs can write citations. So that's That's one thing as far as the recreation boulders. That's what we are concerned about. But we are right now. Yeah, we're not seeing as many boulders just because they're staying out of the rivers because they are so high.
Yeah, I mean, is this a conversation you're having with, law enforcement and as well as the DNR or the, Upper Mississippi River Wildlife and Fish Refuge as well with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service? I wonder if this is kind of a conversation you're having.
It a lot of times the conversation is going on, more so in informal sessions. It's also a lot of times there are lock operators and lock masters. We'll get with the local law enforcement just to, at least once a year or maybe twice a year just to get them on the same sheet of paper, and law enforcement can address can raise their concerns, and our folks can raise our concerns, stuff like that. So there is communication, but like I said, a lot of it's probably more on the informal as opposed to the formal structure.
Todd, I wonder, the National Weather Service is also one of those organizations that is one of many that kind of has their hands in the riverway. And I wonder if you can talk about maybe what those conversations have been like this spring.
With
other organizations that, kind of have their hand in the river.
I think, as you've heard here today, that it's mainly about the forecast and what the, couple week trends are, that type of thing. And then you have the local communities up and down the river that are really focusing on that exact level. Certainly when the water was high, you had a lot of interest in where sandbagging might be needed and roadways and things like that. And, of course, the risk of fatalities from flood drownings and things like that, which we're always watching out for. So I think it's just really paying attention to the weather pattern shifts and what that expected trend is going to be in the next week or two.
Yeah, I mean, could you talk a little bit about how you think kind of communication is with local communities, as you mentioned, especially when it comes to emergency management practices? Do you feel like, that communication is, at its best or as maybe improved?
I think overall it's improved quite a bit. We do what we can to work with, we more specialize in working with individual county governments and the communities. And so this spring, knowing that there was a higher than normal flood risk, there was a lot of meetings and even maybe the George and some of the other agencies might have been involved in those meetings, but to kind of plan for the worst case scenarios and be ready for those kind of situations. So we've had these meetings, we've provided webinars, tried to keep people updated on what the soil moisture and related forecast rainfalls are, things like that. So been a lot more of that kind of outreach this spring, certainly.
The National Weather Service also interacts with the public. I know you have a very active Facebook page and community there. I wonder just what you guys have seen as far as public interest in all of the high waters this spring.
Well, as you could expect, a lot more interest of ways to track water levels, again, forecasts. But then maybe not on a commerce level, one thing that there's been more interest of and what we're, again, focusing on with outreach is the risk of people driving into high water and getting caught. We did have, one fatality at least along the Mississippi down between La Crosse and Prairie du Chien this spring. And so anytime you're talking about water in areas that normally isn't and, some related flash flooding with some of these individual thunderstorm events, then we run that risk of people getting caught off guard or making bad decisions, unfortunately, like we're seeing. And it's not just in our area, too, but over the entire Midwest, there's been a kind of an uptick in, a flood fatality a day or a couple a day and that sort of thing just because of the high water. Again, not necessarily a commerce type of thing, but a public safety type of concern.
Molly, I wonder if safety is also something that the shipping industry has been concerned about with, operators on the high waters.
Oh, absolutely. When you have a crew out there and you've got these higher than normal flows going by, the industry is in general will make sure that the tow and the crew members are safe first and foremost because, as we spoke to it earlier in the broadcast, you never know what's coming down the river. You really can't see a lot of the debris that's being pushed by this, you know, the strong water and currents. So we really do take a proactive approach with that. And there are a lot of areas that have gone to just running in daylight hours to make sure that they're able to transit safely when they're able to do that.
You know, Molly, earlier we were talking about long-term impacts, and I just wonder if there are, you know, are other long-term impacts that you guys are worried with, you know, once we return to normal levels here?
Well, you know, a lot of people would think that just with the issues that you face with Mother Nature on the river in general, that people would start moving their products by other modes of transportation, you know, whether it's rail or truck. And I think that just with the volumes that are being moved, we're just going to have to keep every year kind of fighting the good fight to stay in this battle and do what we can to make sure that it doesn't start to drive commerce off the river.
Todd, earlier in the show, we were talking about climate change and the potential, you know, changes in weather patterns we're seeing in this area. And one of those weather patterns we've definitely been seeing is these, you know, heavy, frequent rains at the end of summer, in early fall. I wonder if that is also something the National Weather Service is looking out for this year.
Well, I think we're always looking for those kind of weather patterns that would set up for that. I don't know if there's any evidence out there that suggests this fall necessarily we're going to have a repeat type of performance like we did last year. But again, you talk about kind of the trends that we're seeing. You're right, there has been history of those in the last 10 years, 15 years, that sort of thing. And that just leads you into kind of this cycle where the following spring you're much more prone to have flooding and these types of concerns. So I think it's becoming, I don't know if more than normal, but something, yeah, that we're all kind of watching as close as we can and with that time frame you're talking about.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, do those kind of typical events impact the water levels on the Mississippi? So, you know, could we be seeing water levels rise at the end of the season here?
Again, it's hard to say. Maybe a little bit greater potential than other years because we are so wet already. But you have to realize that even just a kind of a normal rain shouldn't cause too many troubles. But right now we do have a little bit higher runoff. So I think what we don't want to see rehappen is like the pattern we were in late April into May, where we get again rounds and rounds of thunderstorms, and that's the bigger flooding cases along the Mississippi River. That seems to be the case where you have where you're stuck in a weather pattern for weeks, where it just keeps raining big extensive rain fields across sections of the Midwest, and so some of the waterways that Molly mentioned earlier, you know, coming in from the Missouri and the Ohio and you know, even around here, the Chippewa River in Wisconsin and things like that are just can collect so much water that it's all stuff we have to kind of keep an eye on.
George, what if we do see a kind of a repeat performance, as Todd put it, of last fall's really, you know, heavy, frequent rains? What would that mean for the Corps?
For what that means for us is that we just need to be prepared for the, you know, worst-case scenario for come spring 2020 navigation season. But, you know, and this was mentioned early on in the program where the events last fall really set us up sediment-wise for what we're looking at, what we're experiencing now. Everything that happened last fall and into the early winter really set us up for the situation we're in now. So if we do have another wet fall like we did last winter, then we could potentially see similar outcome next year this time. It would really, like to say, you know, Mother Nature has 51% of the vote, so we'll see what she has up her sleeve.
Molly, thinking about you know, that potential for rain this fall, you know, I wonder with that impact that it would have on agriculture, if that is also something that is a scary potential for the shipping industry.
Absolutely. We don't like to look that far out. We're kind of like the National Weather Service. We don't want to go that far out just because right now we would like to see things start moving now, because if we did have another significant, you know, event in the fall, that could be crippling to a lot of the farmers, a lot of the docks, a lot of, you know, the ripple effect beyond the river and the people that it would hurt would be significant.
Molly Isnardi, Vice President of Upper River Services in St. Paul. George Stringham, spokesman for the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And Todd Shea, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in La Crosse. Join us today to talk about prolonged flooding on the Mississippi River this spring and how the Corps and river industries are responding. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.